Chapter 8. Raindrops fell onto the cold, cobbled streets below. The Plutonian Council gathered in a dimly lit room, their elongated shadows casting monstrous silhouettes along the wall. Six titans of industry sat around a massive table inlaid with patterns of ivory and ebony. "Let's get started, shall we?" Leo, the leader of the council, spoke with a soft voice. His predatory eyes surveyed his peers, each one a testament to human ambition. Leo Capiri had founded the council and been its leader for as long as any of the members could remember. Sometimes they felt like they had their own vampire running the show, given his age and vast influence and wealth. It was anybody's guess how old he was. What Leo brought to the table in addition to his age, power, and money, however, was food. His family was of Italian heritage, but had immigrated to the US when Leo was small. Now, Leo had what could only be called a harem of wives and a brood of children swarming around the dozen or so mega mansions he owned across the country. The wives ranged in age from 18 to 70, and, coincidentally, so did the kids. Despite having a harsh and cruel attitude towards most things, his exterior manner was calm and diplomatic. His approach generally put people at ease, usually at their peril. He nodded to the Asian woman on his right. Angela Shinigami hailed from the world of pharmaceuticals and healthcare. She held the reins of an array of corporations, numbered companies, and subsidiaries that churned out medication at extreme premium prices, while simultaneously using other companies to lobby against affordable healthcare. Unless, of course, her companies were providing the necessary drugs and beds to various government programs. These were extremely lucrative opportunities because governments are very slow to change, as opposed to private companies that can shift suppliers on a whim. Her ultimate motivation was similar to that of the other members of the council, to keep the populace tethered to her products, perpetuating a cycle of dependency and profit. Angela, our dear prophetess of pain, what do you have for us today? Leo asked, a wicked smile stretching across his face. Profits are up, as always, she said with a smirk, embodying the black-hearted spirit of Cerberus, guarding the gates of affordable health. Excellent. I'll get back to you in a moment. I think we all need to talk about next steps after what happened during the pandemic, Leo said. Across from him sat Hector Holdfast, known for his stranglehold on the media and tech landscape. Hector was in his 70s and had thin, wiry black hair that was obviously dyed because his long, straggly nose hairs were whiter than rice. He sat quietly in a loose-fitting polo shirt, dark blazer, designer chinos and $1,000 shoes imported from Italy. He manipulated truth and information to suit his whims, but also to support any initiatives launched by the council and to mitigate against any challenges it faced. He had an empire built on misinformation and deceit, and leveraged his communications and tech network to spread the lies. His social media platform, Smatter, had more than 1 billion users, making it one of the most popular networks on the planet. Hector was like a modern-day Medusa, having the power to turn public opinion to stone with a single headline, paralyzing progress with just a few well-planted opinion pieces. Hector had requested that the council meet in person, a rare request given that he loved to monitor, record, and store their conversations for later dates in case he needed any ammunition against it. "Hector," Leo nodded at him, "how goes your crusade against free thought?" "Better than ever," replied Hector, his grin sharp enough to rival a serpent's fang. "Fake news has got people eating out of my hand." "That's my job," Leo said, evoking what might actually be a smile. "You've asked us to meet today, but I want to give the other members a few moments to give us updates. Sometimes, based on your news networks, reports, it's a little hard to appreciate the line between truth and profits." It was Hector's turn to share a thin smile. Next was Sat Ryfield, a baron of the fossil fuel industry. Sat came from a long line of Ryfields, a family known for ravaging the earth for its resources. Like generations before him, he showed no remorse for the environmental ruin left in his wake. Sat was a modern version of Hades, ruling over a realm of darkness and pollution, stink and muck. Ryfield was known for making things happen. As the owner of Acheron Oil, this mega-billionaire businessman dominated the oil and gas distribution, legislation, and government subsidies to carbon-producing companies. Nothing happened in the energy sector without Ryfield knowing about it. He and his multitude of subsidiaries were extremely effective at getting government subsidies. His family owned a string of other companies related to the energy sector, all of which were committed to keeping carbon-producing industries in business for years to come. They were renowned as masters of greenwashing and were proponents of new carbon industries such as hydrogen fuel, which is mostly made from fossil fuels. They also sponsored global climate change events and negotiations, an elegant way of putting themselves in control of the agenda. Sat Ryfield was the greatest representation of what many in mainstream media labeled oligarchs, a play on the words oil and oligarch. "Ah, Sat," Capri said with feigned affection, "how fares the process of spoiling the planet for generations to come?" "Right on schedule. We can't chew it up fast enough," Sat replied, his smirk as oily as the slicks left in the oceans by his companies. With the help of Hector's media teams, greenwashing and gaslighting are such a happy pair, he added. Climate change activists are finally being arrested en masse, which helps us push ahead with lobbying for an array of new carbon and chemical products. It's unlikely that even the EU will be able to block some of our nastier shit. Hector had to be mindful of his body language, so he shut his lids while his eyes rolled hard. He had never heard so many clichés in his life. He opened his eyes again, looked around, and thought the whole scenario was borrowed straight from a bad comic book, the focus moving frame by frame to each character, so they could offer up their short expositions on global conquest. Regardless, he waited patiently while they carried on. He'd have his moment at the end of the updates. Sat continued, "Honestly, some of the old-school villains from World War II would be proud of how great some of our propaganda is." "The campaigns continue," he said, nodding appreciatively to Hector. "Promoting the idea that we're awesome, the world needs us, and we're doing great things for the planet. We're doubling down on our carbon capture program to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Of course, carbon capture is complete bullshit, but we've got a pretty site called futurealliance.com that the media is amplifying and broadcasting to the public." He paused, feeling proud of himself and the havoc that he and his companies were pushing. It was Stella's turn to provide an update. Stella Green went by the label of Queen of Green. She excelled in her manipulation of the financial markets and anything to do with investments. Green was an innovator and genius from an early age, graduating as a chartered financial analyst, CFA, shortly after she completed her MBA from the University of Cape Town in South Africa at just age 25. Her family had a long history of gold mining and was a major benefactor to the school. They saw to it that she got through several programs without impediment, not that she needed much support. Stella quickly became an expert with global infrastructure projects, all of which were designed to maximize extraction from public pockets in exchange for poorly built infrastructure that would collapse within a generation. Blame was almost always shifted to the hapless, inexperienced bureaucrats who had no idea what they were getting themselves into. Dreams and vision slowly morphed into nightmares, populist anger, and privatization. The latter outcome would result in massive arrays of public property being sold to private investors for pennies on the dollar. "We had to take a hit on several lawsuits related to a certain sex for favors individual who shall remain nameless," Green started, wincing at the idea of spending rather than receiving money. "The settlements shut the lid on that pervert's elaborate pedophilia ring, and now we're almost finished covering any tracks or relations associated with him. I trust everyone in the room kept their distance from these unfortunate interactions," Capiri asked rhetorically. Everyone murmured and quietly nodded, fully aware that their closets were bursting with skeletons that people would love to dig up. That said, in response to price increases over the last couple of years, all in the guise of supply chain issues, most of the central banks are hiking their rates right on cue, squeezing more people out of their homes because they can't afford the mortgages any longer. This puts them in our rental units. We have some places turning over at 100% increases in North American cities. Excellent, Capiri whispered with approval, then turned to another of his colleagues. Garamond, my friend, I already know how well you've done in the last couple of decades. The latest US budgets had all kinds of cuts, but you ensured the military wouldn't be a casualty. Griffith Garamond was standing in the back, looming over the rest of them like a dark cloud. His primary goal in life was to leave a mark on the world, literally. His sole function was to blow everything up as long as there was money involved. He was driven to deceive, disrupt, distract, destroy, or shock. Garamond's pet peeve was people who were weak or who defended things that couldn't pick up a weapon, like animals or trees. Since 9/11, his own private army of alt-right mercenary soldiers had stood ready to do almost anything at his command. Where I come from, cutting the military would be like severing the heart's aorta. Anyone who supported such madness would quickly be cut down politically, and quite possibly many other ways, he said coldly. Military, surveillance, security, and other forces have expanded well beyond people's ability to pay for them. Democracy won't last much longer with this kind of pressure on the cash pipeline, but we'll keep up appearances so people keep punching the clock. We had an incident recently where we were testing AI with some security drones. It was a complete disaster. The AI drone shot and killed several ground crew who were operating it. We quickly covered it up, saying that it was an IED left by environmental protesters in the area, and, thanks to Holdfast, the story didn't make much headway in the media. Anything to help the council, Holdfast added quickly, taking the moment to gain control of the conversation. Despite your unfortunate experience with artificial intelligence, I have news about a platform that I've been working on for several years now. I've kept it under wraps because I didn't want competitors to know what we had developed, but I'm really quite excited to reveal it to you now. He paused for effect. I'd like to tell you about the Global Artificial Intelligence Accumulation Program that we've developed. We call it GAIA for short.